We're on Daf Tzadi Ches Amid Aleph, and we want to begin with the second statement of Rabba. Last time we learned the first statement of Rabba about throwing someone's coin to the bottom of the sea, and even though the owner of the coin is going to have to pay those professional scuba divers to dig up the matbea from the bottom of the sea, but that's called groman, he doesn't have to pay for that. And now, as an extension, we started the sugya of hashaf matbea. Let's go on. And if you want to find it, it's about, I'd say, a third or close to a halfway down from the top. The first wooden line is v'tzarta hakesef v'yodech v'lecha. Then it says v'yomar rava, v'yomar rava. Hashaf matbea shel chavero patur. If he removes the seal, the what's called the chosem of the kingship of the malchus from the top of the coin, he's potter. My time at the lo avad v'lo midi. So I want to share with you the explanation of this gemara from the Evin HaOzel, which I have here in a footnote. Right, he was the Rosh Hashiva of a yeshiva in Yerushalayim called Eitz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Zalman Meltzer. And he writes the following. He says that a matbea back in the day its value was a combination of two variables. It was X plus Y. First, it was the mateches itself, the inherent value of the metal, and that has an inherent value. He calls it a shivui atzmi. And then on top of that, there was a chosem that was added, and that chosem gave it an extra value. And he says the following, it's very interesting, that even if you remove the chosem, even though now the object, the coin, the metal doesn't have the same value, because it's worth its weight in metal, but not Y. It doesn't have the additional value of the Malchus. But nevertheless, even after, this is a chiddush, even after you remove the Tzura, the Chosem, from the Matbea, nevertheless, it can be replaced. You know, what you do is you take the metal, and you bring it to the treasury, or wherever it is, of the Malchus, and they can actually replace the tzura, remint it. And he says, therefore, the only time that you're chayev in the case of destroying a coin is when you impact in an irreversible way the actual guf hamadbea, he calls, which is the mateches itself. But if you only remove the chosem, he says, you haven't really in any way removed something on the guf hamatbeah. You haven't destroyed the guf hamatbeah, and since you didn't destroy the guf hamatbeah, means the actual mateches of the matbeah, you only caused its devaluation, because now the coin as metal without a chosem is not worth the same amount of money. So you've taken away from this object its value, and now you've caught that extra value, which we called right Y, because we said it's X plus Y, and now that's called grumma. What you're going to have to do is the owner of the coin is going to have to do is going to have to take it to be reminted, but that's going to cost them. But nevertheless, that's called an indirect gram hezek, meaning the loss is not direct. When do we say it's considered a direct hezek, and he can be sued in court for damages? That's only if he destroys the guf hamatbeah, the metal itself. So in effect, what we're saying is that a physical object in this world could have value beyond its physical object, meaning even if the physical object is not destroyed per se in any inherent or profound way, but yet it could be devaluated because it loses some sort of an extra value. And that extra value has to do with the, in a sense, the power of the object, which in this particular case is the buying power of the object as a result of the chosem. And therefore, hani mili, the Gemara says very well, that when are you potter, according to Rabbah, And when do we say lo avid v'lo midi? You haven't really done a ma'aseh hezek because you didn't impact or destroy the guf hamatbeah, meaning the metal of the matbeah. That's only the mechay bekurnasa. What he was able to do was he was able to take a kurnus, which is some sort of a hammer, and tarshe, and he was able to remove by smoothing out the metal. He was able to remove the tzura of the matbeah. Basically, in a sense, he squashes the tzura down, but the actual physical structure or metallic weight of the coin has not been affected. Aval, but if shayfe b'shufina, if he takes something called a shufina, which is in Hebrew called, Rashi says a ptsira, which is I think a file of some sort, and what he does is he actually removes a layer of the coin. So not only has he removed the tzura, but he's also removed something from the physical metal element of the coin, and that's called chasure mechasre. Chasure means he removed something in the guf hamatbeya. In such a case, he's chayov. Wait, just 1 second. Don't rally me here. I haven't even started the shiur yet. Okay. What exactly is he chayov in this case? Okay. So let's try to figure it out. So here we have an amazing chiddush of the Ktzos, and the Ktzos derives it from Tosfos. Tosfos says the following. This is Dibra Maskel Mosiv, and we'll get to this Tosfos a little bit later, but I want to pull out, as the Ktzos does, 4 words from this Tosfos. It's on line 3 in Tosfos Mosiv, and he writes at the end of that line, B'shafyeh. Right, Shafi, if you remember, is the second case of Rava with regard to the coin, where he files it down and he removes some of the actual metal. Then Tosfos says, Chayav Bechol HaKilkul. Says the Ktzos, very interesting, that although if he removes the Tzura alone, and that's all he does, he's not Chayav at all, B'dinei Adam. However, if he removes not only the Tzura, but he also removes part of the metal, then he's chayv al kol akilkul. Says the Ktzos, a fascinating chiddush, that true, for the lack or the loss of the chosem, you can't sue him, but that's only true if only he removed the chosem. But if he dug into, so to speak, the guf ha-matbeah, and he removed some of the metal itself, then he's chayev not only for the loss of the value of X, if you remember the X that we called about the value, the depreciation of the metal, but he's also chayev for Y, which is the depreciation as a result of the loss of the chosem.
Why is that?
And the Ktzos says, therefore, listen to the Ktzos' conclusion, that in the previous case of Rabba, where he threw someone's coin to the bottom of the sea, he says the following, that if on its way down, the coin bounces off a stone, I don't know what you call it, a stone at the bottom of the sea, a coral or whatever, a reef, I don't know, whatever you want to call it, and then he says that the matbea itself was partially destroyed, then he says that the Zorek is chayev not only for the devaluation of the coin, he's also chayev to pay the wages of the scuba divers. And that's called chayev ala kol, meaning that basically there's a chiyuv of grama as well. Again, getting back to the original case of Tosus, the tsura samatbeah, the chosem of the matbeah is called grama. But there should be a chiyuv on groma. The only reason that Lamaisa in court, he can't sue him and force him to pay for the damage of the groma of the tzura, is only because he was lacking a maisa hezek. But once he's got a maisa hezek, then we're going to evaluate all the losses that the owner of, in this case, the matbea is going to suffer. He loses both the value of the metal, and as well, he loses some of the buying power of this metal because He's got to replace the chosem. Let's say it's going to cost him 10 to replace the chosem, the seal, right? He has to go to the government and whatever they charge for adding the seal. That's one loss. The metal itself is worth less. That's a loss of another 10. He's going to be chayav 20. That's the chiddush of the ketzos. The Chazon Ish doesn't like it. We don't have time now for the Chazon Ish's objections, but I wanted to share with you this brilliant insight of the Ketzos, and we're going to soon see that that's going to have a tremendous impact on our understanding of the sugya of Hiko al Eino, which we want to see now. So the Gemara says the following: Masiv Rava. We have a Brisa that seems to contradict Rabba. Now, when we read this Brisa, let's try to understand this Brisa through the eyes of Rabba. And I think it's a very smooth Brisa. I don't know what Rava is objecting to. The Brisa says, with regard to Yitzias Evet, B'Shem V'Ayin, that there's a distinction between two scenarios. In the first, Hiko al Eino V'Sima. Hiko al Ozno v'Chersho. Ha'eved Yotze Bohen L'Cherus. The Eved lost his power of sight, he lost his power of hearing, and therefore that's called Yotze B'Roshe Varv Yotze B'Shein V'Ayin. He destroyed his ayin, he destroyed his ear, his ozen, that's one of the Evarim, the 24 Evarim, and therefore he goes L'Cherus. So far, so good. We understand, and it's not good for the Eved, but it's good for us. Keneged Eino, but in this case where he doesn't hit him directly on the eye, and as I mentioned to you on Tuesday, that Rashi learns elsewhere in Masechta Kedushin that he smacked up against the kosel, and somehow that noise was close to the eye, and he lost his sight as a result of that. In modern Hebrew, we call it behala. In English, I guess you'd call it like a shock. And therefore, he loses his power of sight. Keneged ozno, he hits the kosel. Rashi says he makes a loud noise, and he was very shocked by it. The Eved, and the Eved was very surprised. The Gemara has this very similar back in Achova, where he blows something in his ear, and he gets so shocked that he loses his power of hearing. V'eino shomea, ein ha'eved yotzi bahen lecherus. Nu, Rav Osai, what's the difference between the first case and the second case from Rabba's perspective? Correct. The first case is a direct hezek. It's a maisa biyadayim, and it's direct. He hit him over the eye. He hit him over the ear. In the second case, on the other hand, since he banged onto the kosel, and as an indirect result, the eved lost his power of sight or his power of hearing. That's called grama, and therefore it's not considered an act of chavola. And he doesn't go free. What does Rava want here? Why is he chepering here against Rava? On the contrary, the very fundamental distinction that this Bryce is assuming between the Reish and the Sefer is predicated on Rava's Chiddush, that you're not chayav in the Zikin for anything but a direct hezek and not for groma.
I thought he was talking about the situation where Hikawa and Ozno. It's contradicted to the eye.
Oh, why? Why is that a contradiction to Rabba?
On Ozno, there's actually no chisaron.
Excellent. Okay, good. Very good. So Zev says a good pshat over here. That it's not the Sefer that's problematic. Adarabba, the Sefer, Eino Yotze Ben Becheris, is exactly what Rabba's been yelling and screaming. The Reisha is a problem, because even the Reisha, the Gemara thinks, is a case of Grama. Why? Why is it called grama? So the answer is, as Zev points out very well, that there's something called the physical object, and then there's something called the power of that object. Meaning, Rabba, in his case of Ashof Matbea, distinguished between the buying power, which depends upon what? The tzura, the chosem, and the actual gufa matbea, which is the metal element. I'm relying here on the Evan Ozel. So too, with regard to the eye, or for that matter, any other member, any other part of the human body, there's the physical organ itself, and then there's the power of the organ. And that power of the organ, in the case of the eye, is very profound. It's very obvious. You know, this is a wonderful example. If we want to speak about the physical element of the eye and its koach, the koach of the eye to see is parallel to the koach of the coin through its tzura, through its chosem, to buy. The buying power is enhanced by the... Now again, you know, the eye itself as a physical organ maybe has some value to it. Again, it's hard to talk about human organs as value unless you're trafficking in organ transplants illegally. But what I mean to say is that if he removed the koach of re'iyah without damaging the eye in the physical sense, meaning the physical guf ha'ayin is the same, that would be parallel to rabbah. So the Mefarshim say that as far as the ayin is concerned, there's no doubt that when he hits him on the eye, he actually damages the physical eye. However, the Braisa gives a second case. What's the second case? He ko al ozno. The Gemara thinks that he ko al ozno means that when the Eved received the blow onto his ear, he lost his power of hearing, but there was no physical destruction of the ear itself.
But Rashi holds it that the ozen is not growing. He says that the feverish is not growing.
Okay, we'll see where Rashi gets it from with the Gemara's answer. We don't know the answer of the Gemara, but right now, at this point, Rashi would admit that if he hits him on his ear and the ear has not been changed in the physical sense, just that its power of hearing has been lost, that's called groma. And therefore, he should not be yotze milecherus. And the Gemara answers, no, that's not what happens. It's not just that when he hit him on his ear, the power of hearing was lost. It's much more physical or biological than that. And the Gemara says, Rabba litame, this issue about hitting someone on the ear, whether it physically destroys the ear, is nogea to a matter of life and death, in the case of Chovel B'Aviv. Because in Chovel B'Aviv, you're chayav for the physical destruction of a member of the father's body, which is measured by what, Rabbi Osai? How do you know if it's a chavur or not? By blood. The Omar Rabba Chershol B'Aviv Nerak. Now again, if the ear of the father, although it was victimized by a smack, but it still remains intact, if there hasn't been any bloodletting in the physical organ of the ear, in the inner part of the ear internally, then you would not be chayav for causing the loss of hearing, as terrible as that is, but you're not chayav misa for that. But Rabbi says, Chershol Yoviv Nerag. What was Rabbi's medical expertise here? She efshar l'charisha b'lo chabura de tipasa de doma naflat lebi ozne. That he doesn't just lose his power of hearing, but if you took an instrument or maybe a microscope and you would take a look at the inner ear, what you would find is that there was blood that was lost inside the ear, and that's called chabura. And that's nafgamina legabi misa in the case of Chershol Yoviv, but as a nafgamina ledine mamanos in the case of Hiko al Ozno. Because if Hiko al Ozno just would mean that he lost the power of hearing, he would not be chayev neither for payment as a mazik, nor would his Eved be Yotze L'Cherus. The reason why Eved Yotze L'Cherus is because Rabbah, being very consistent, holds that when you hit someone on the ear and they lose their power of hearing, that's not groma. You are actually destroying the physical ear. And that's parallel to the case of Shaifei Shifune, where in Shaifei Shifune he files down the matbea and he loses destroys part of the metal of the matbea. That's called a direct Maisa Hezek, and he's Chayav and Dini Momenis, not Bitar Groma, but Bitar Maisa Hezek. The same thing applies when the ear loses its power of hearing. It's not just a matter of what? of the koach, you know, the chosem that we spoke about, but it's the physical gufa ozen that was destroyed. And I just wanted to read you this one line here that I found in the name of someone called the Imre Tzvi, but I don't find that this is very helpful. I'm just pointing it out as we go along. He wants to say that in the case of Hiko al Eno Visima Lo Hikshasa, the Gemara never asked the question. He says Kevan Shabiko al Eno Hadavar Nikar Bugufa Ayin. If a person is Rachman al Tzlan blinded by a smack on his eye, you can see it in the eye. That would be obvious. It's Nikar Bugufa Ayin. He really destroys the organ itself. And he says that in the case of Ozen, that's not obvious. It's an internal kind of injury. And you don't know, did he lose the Koach HaShmi alone? Or did he destroy his ear? And then he writes, Ubi Ofet Shesimo Bilosha Okaras Eino. He says that if he would blind him without removing his eye, Afal Pichein Hadover Azed Nikar Begufa Ayin. Even though he didn't chas shalom remove his eye, the eye is still there, but you can see with the naked eye the damage that was done to his eye. Okay, that's the sugya now, and we go on to another sugya of Rabba. This is Rabba number 3, and I'm moving at the speed of light here because I want to try to get to the sugya of Garmi. Oh my Rabba, Hatzoreim Ozen Paraso Shel Chavero Potur. My Taima Para Kidikaima Kaima Dilo Avad Velo Midi. Why? Because for Kulu Shvarim Lav Lagabi Mizbeach Kaimi. So he made a very slight incision in the ear of the cow. And the cow now technically becomes what? A balmum. It's possible. Lemizbeach. And yet he's potter. Why is he potter, says Rabba? So here we have the literal translation of Rabba's words. And then we have a gigantic machlokus rishonim, what Rabba had in mind. So first let's translate the words of Rabba. And then we'll see the two shittas of rishonim and which one of those two shittas is closer, shall I say, to the pshuto shel mikra, the words of Rabba. Rabba says the para is exactly as it was before. It has this incision, and therefore there's not a hezek to the para. And then Rabba adds another point here, which sounds like, he's telling us inami, like another alternative explanation of why he's potur, and that is that your average shar is not designated, it's not singled out for the Mizbeach. Meaning, had it been singled out for the Mizbeach, and this is Tosfos says, that im kvar hukdisha ha-para le-karbon, vaday nechshav le-nezek v'chayev. Says Tosfos, that if, this is Divrei Maskal HaTzoreim, that if in fact this animal was designated, right, then it would be what? He would be chayev for creating a mum in the animal. Fectosis, I don't understand. There's a Mishnah on Daf Tzadi Vav Amid Beis, we studied it. Gozal Behema Vinis Avdu Ba'Vero Shenifsal Malgabi Mizbeach Omer Lo Areshal Chol Lefanecha. So Tosfos says the following: if a man steals an animal, and then a mum, a blemish, falls into the animal, falls not figuratively, but it gets blemished, and now it is disqualified from the Mizbeach. So the halacha is that the gazlan has a right to say to the nigzal, Hareishal Cha Lifanecha. Right? And yet we're talking about what kind of animal, Rabosai? We're talking about an animal of Hegdesh, a famous Hegdesh.
It's not Hegdesh yet.
Yes, it already is Hegdesh. That's the case in the Mishnah. The Mishnah is talking about a case where he stole a famous Hegdesh, and now it became possible to be on Mizbeach. And what does the Gazan have the right to say to the Nigzal? Hareishal chal lifanecha. Okay, that was the mission that we discussed then, but let's just hear Tosus's chiddush here. That's what I want to get to. Tosus says that our Gemara assumes that Stam Shvarim is lav legabi mizbeach kaimi. Implying, says Tosus, that if it would have been a behemoth hegdesh and he created a mum, he would be chayav. If that's the case, it means it's a real full-fledged hezek. Why then does the Gazan have a right to say to the owner of the behemoth hegdesh? Again, why he's chayav for behemoth hegdesh? We had a long discussion. We're going to get to it again. That's called davar gamli moment. But let's not get distracted. Let's just stick on to the course of what we have to study. Now we want to know if creating a blemish in an animal that is already hegdesh l'mizbeach, is that called a hezek, which is now culpable? He's chayev to pay for that in Bezdin. And Tosus wants to say the following. It all depends. When is the gazlan able to say to the Nigzal, HaReishal Cholfanecha, says Tosus, Hainu, Shenevda Ba'avera, V'nifsala Me'eleha. That's only in the case where the Gazlan stole an animal, and then it became possible. If it became possible, he has a right to say, HaReishal Cholfanecha. Aval hitil ba mum biyadayim. If the Gazlan went ahead and he actively made a mum in the animal, is then he would be chayav. And yet, Rabba says that even though he made a mum in the animal, he's potur. Yesh lomar d'masnisin ayri b'behema kedosha. Divadi l'gabi mizbeach kaimi. But our case of Rava, why is he potter when he makes this incision and he makes a mum in the animal? Because we're talking about what? Stam Shvarim. So Tosus now comes to the following conclusion. That anytime you see in any Mishnah, anywhere in Shas, that creating a mum is not machayev in a case of Gazlan, a Gazlan in a case of a Mazik and a Mazik, that's only in a case where either it was a behemus hegdesh v'nafla b'mum me'eleha, or it was stam shvarim, and therefore it's lav l'mizbeach kaimi, and even though he actively created this mum, he doesn't have to pay. But you see clearly that Tosus holds that if it was a behemoth hegdesh, then creating a mum in the animal is definitely considered what? A direct maisa hezek for which he has to pay damages. Oh, so now we get to the crux of our issue today. Why is it that Rabba says, Hatzorem bi'ozen parasa shel chavero potter? Why is he potter? And here we have a gigantic machlokas. The Nemuki Yosef says he's potur because the value of the para is identical. It has not changed at all. Without the incision, it's worth X. And even after the incision, it's worth X. Why? Because it's Stam Shvarim, which is Lav, Legabi Mizbeach Kaimi. So when you buy a shor, the fact that the shor has this minor mum in it, you know, right, the Gemara says in Gittin that in the studio of Kamsa Bar Kamsa, that what do they do? They made an incision in the animal. It didn't affect the animal, but it became possible Likarmon. So that case, says the Muki Yosef, is such that if it's not a behemoth hegdesh, then there's no loss in the value of the animal. However, Abosai, if you were selling a behemoth hegdesh on the market, not stam shvarim, then the value of the animal presumably would go down as a result of what? Of the mum. Tosa says, on the other hand, that our sugya of Rabba is based on a whole different consideration. Perhaps Tosus would say that maybe the value of the animal went down a little bit. I don't know. Tosus says that if the the value of the animal was affected by its worthiness for the Mizbeach, or lack thereof, that, says Tosfos, is called a Hezek She'eno Nikar. What does that mean, a Hezek She'eno Nikar? For example, the Gemara tells us, and it's in the same Mishnah that Tosfos quoted earlier, that if, for example, you steal chametz, and it was before Pesach, and now it's after Pesach, and the chametz became what? Asur v'anah. Nevertheless, the Gazlan could say, Hareshal cha lefanecha. Tosfos says that's called a hezek sheino nikar. Or let's say, for example, a tameh would come in contact with the truma of his friend. Now the truma became truma tmeya. That's called a hezek sheino nikar. Where is the address for hezek sheino nikar? That's a Gemara Masechta Gittin on Daf Nun Gimel Amud Aleph. The Gemara says that there's a machlokes between Chizkiah and Rabbi Yochanan. Chizkiah says, Hezek she'eno nikar shmei Hezek, and he's chayav. Rabbi Yochanan disagrees and he says, Hezek she'eno nikar is potur, b'dinei adam at least. Says Tosfos that our sugya here is dependent upon the machlokes between Chizkiah and Rabbi Avo. Now clearly the value of Truma after it becomes Tmeya has been seriously, profoundly depreciated. The value of Chametz after Pesach passes and it becomes Osir Anah has seriously and profoundly been depreciated. And yet, Tosfos says that our sugya of Rabba, even if I grant you, against the Nebuki Yosef, that the value of the par would be depreciated as a result of this stream of Tzorem, nevertheless, he would still be potter under the halach of what? Hezek Sheino Nikar. So here's the two nafkaminas between the Nebuki Yosef and Tosfos. According to Nebuki Yosef, if the value of the para would have gone down, even though it's a stam para, he would have to pay. And this has nothing to do with Hezek Shein and Nikar. This is a Hezek Nikar. According to Tosfos, on the other hand, even if the value of the para decreased, he would still be potter, because this sugya is holding that what? Rab is holding that Hezek Shein and Nikar, lav shmei Hezek. And the second nafkamina is going to be according to Chizkiah. If I maintain that Hezek Shene Nikar Shmei Hezek, like Chizkiah and Gittin and Gimel, then in this case of Tzorem Stam Behema, he would be Chayav, because according to Chizkiah, even in the case of a Hezek Shene Nikar, he's Chayav. But if I go like the Nuki Yosef, then forget about it. Even Chizkiah would say he's Potter, because there's no depreciation in the market value of the para. And Rabosai, this machlokes, I think, is going to have an impact on Masiv Rava. Rava asks Akasha on Rabba from a brisa. What's the subject of this brisa, Rabosai? Paras Chatos, correct? David, you remember this. We racked our brains on this. Yes. What does the brisa say? Ha'osem melacha b'mechatos. If a person takes mechatos, to which you have to add the afer of the paraduma, or he does melacha with paras chatos, with the hafer itself, the cow itself, and now the para becomes psula, it can no longer be used for mechatos. In other words, we can't do the shechita and the sreifas hapara and create the efer chatos. Why? Because he did malacha with it. That's a terrible thing. I would tar and feather him. Potter v'dinei adam v'chayev v'din shamayim. Once again, Rabosai, at this point, if I want to look at this brisa from the perspective through the eyes of Rabba, what's the difference here? Why is he potter v'dinei adam? Why is he chayev v'din shamayim? So it depends. If Rabba's statement was that we're talking according to Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabba adopts the sheet of Rabbi Yochanan that Hezek Shein and Nikar is part of Adam, v'chayev din shamayim, then this case is a classical case of hezek shein nikar. But if we go like the shita of the Nemuki Yosef, we're in deep trouble over here, because Nemuki Yosef claims that Soreim Ozno Shalparas Stam Shvarim is not a hezek at all, meaning nothing went down in the market price of the para. But how much would you sell a para for if it's a red cow without any black hairs, but it's pasul lechatos? You know, they say that somebody in, I think it was Lakewood or someplace, not necessarily a religious person, I don't think, but he owns a paraduma. Imagine what they're going to pay him for. Dumb Benesina would not wake up his father for that, but, you know, you and I might want to wake up our father for that, you know, because it's a big sale. I mean, we have to learn Kibbutz from even from a guy. But be that as it may, there's a definite, profound devaluation of the par as a result of this malacha. So let's see if we can figure out how the Nemuki Yosef would interpret this sugya. The Gemara says the following: Melacha hu delo minkar hezeka. The Brisa says that why is he patur midini adam? Because he only did melacha, and this works out very beautifully with Tosfos. Delo minkar hezeka means a hezek she'eno nikar, right? Because whether you did the melacha or not, the para looks exactly identical before and after. You know, there's no difference between before and after. But why did the Braisa tell me an even greater chiddush, that he would be patur even in the case of Tzoreim? Apparently, the Braisa is implying that Tzoreim is considered minkar hazeka. Is achinami the mechayev v'dini adam? So again, the entire kasha of Rava stands or falls on the base of this diuk, that the Braisa went so far when it could have gone a lot further. Why did the Braisa tell me a lesser chiddush when it could have told me a greater chiddush? According to Rabba, we've established that Tzoreim is considered a hezek sheino nikar. Why then did the Braisa have to stop short in the case of Osa Malachat Seis Potter? Why not go even a step further? Even something that's even more radical, but it's still necessarily defined according to Rabba as a hezek sheino nikar, namely the case of Tzoreim. Tell me a bigger chiddush. You know, you're already wasting the ink. You might as well tell me the bigger chiddush that even Tzoreim is part of Dini Adam. Rabbo say, what's the answer to that question? If you were Rabba and Rabba was sitting here in the room, what would he say?
Intrinsic value.
Why? Because what kind of a par are we dealing with, Rabbo Sai? Vashtate in the Braisa, paras chatos. That's not the case of Rabba. When did Rabba say that Tzoreim is considered as Ikshenu Nikar, and therefore he's Potur? That's only in the case of what? Stam Shvarim, the Lav L'Mizbeach Kaimi. But Tosfos has already proven from a Mishnah early on, Daf Tzadi Vav, that Rabba would have to admit that if it was a Paras Hegdesh, and it's Omeid L'Mizbeach, is designated as a Korban, then he'd be Chayav for being Tzoreim. If that be the case, then in a paras chatos, obviously Rabba's going to say that if he is tzoreim, he makes a blemish in a paras chatos, and now it's completely disqualified as a paras chatos. That's parallel to the case, not of stam shvarim, but the case of shar shel hegdesh l'mizbeach, in which he's chayav, and Tosfos has already proven that he's chayav. What is Rava asking here? Instead of masiv Rava, we should change the girsa, and it should say the raya. What would be a good Aramaic word for raya? Let's say. Okay, I can't think right now. No. When the Gemara wants to bring a raya, what's the Aramaic phrase for that? Right, Tanya Kavose, right? It should say Tanya Kavose. So the one who's bothered by this, of course, is Tosfos, because Tosfos has really boxed himself into a corner over here. So Tosfos says the following: Diramaschil Hakamashma. Says Tosfos, Hacha bishmaitin, this is line 4 in Tosfos Dibur Maskil Ha. Hacha bishmaitin parech l'rava mimei chatas. Tosfos says it's impossible to understand the question of Rava, against Rava, the objection of Rava, from the case of Paras Chatos. We could only understand it from the case of Mei Chatos. You remember that the Braisa had a ratio and a Seifa, and the ratio was Mei Chatos. So what's Mei Chatos? So you and I would have said that Mei Chatos is a case where they've already designated this Mayim to add to it the Eifer HaPara, and therefore it already has the Kedusha of Mei Chatos. That's what we would have said. Tosfos says you can't say so. It's impossible. Why? The Stam Mayim Lav LeMei Chatos Kaimi. We're talking about a case of Stam Mayim, which allows me to make a comparison, an analogy to Stam Shvarim. And Tosfos says you have to say so, based on a Mishnah in Masechta Para. Of course, we all know Mishnah is Para Bal Peh, so this is not going to be a Chiddush to us. The Kodem Kiddusha, before you designate the Mei Chatos as such, Dafka Pasla Ben Melacha. When is there Psul Melacha in Mei Chatos? That's only when it's what we call Stam Mayim, before Kiddush. Kedisnan Be Masechta Para, that Mayim Hamolacha Poselos Ben Ad Shiatilu Es HaEfer L'Sochan. The Kiddush of the Mayim takes place at the moment that they add the Efer Parah Nisraf to the Mayim. Until such time as they added the Efer Parah, the Mayim is considered Stam Mayim. At what point in time does Molacha disqualify Mei Chatos? You and I would have thought that it's after you added the Efer, therefore you Makadish the Mayim, Pumfaket, the exact opposite is correct. The Psul of Meleches, of Melacha in Mechatos is Dafka when? Before Kiddushan. Is Memela when Rava speaks about a case of Osa Melacha Mechatos? What does he mean by Mechatos? Does he mean Mayim Sheniskadshu Lechatos? Or does it mean Mayim Stam? And the answer is it must be referring to Mayim Stam, and he passed this Mayim. Again, I don't know what the big deal is, so let him replace it with other Mayim. You know, this reminds me of Lawrence of Arabia, you know, who thought that, you know, in order to get Mayim, you have to take the faucets with you. So when he went to a hotel, he took the faucets. Yeah. But whatever it is, I guess, you know, there are other conditions that have to be met in order to replace this Mayim, even though it's Stam Mayim, it's before Kiddush, and that's going to cost him a couple of bucks. And therefore the question is he Chayev? And the answer is he's Chayev B'din Shamayim, but he's part of B'din Adam. Okay, fine. So now let's think about the Kasha of Rava on Rava. Okay, that's what I want to understand.
What's the value of this water before Kiddush?
What's the value of what?
The water before Kiddush.
Again, I don't know all the dinim here of how hassled he'll be to replace this Mayim, but this Mayim is no longer fit for Mechatos. He can't add the Afer into the Mayim. And if he can't add the Afer into the Mayim, he's going to hassle, and you know, in those days they had to carry the water in the buckets, you know, he's going to have to hire this lady to carry the water in the buckets. I don't know. That question I can't answer, sir. But let's work with the Xeris HaKosuv, with the working definition that he's going to have to replace this water, and that itself is a financial loss of paying whatever he has to pay. Oh. So now the Braisa says that hezek is chayev only be din shamayim, but not be dini adam. Why? Because it's a hezek sheino nika. Right? He only did malacha. But wait a second, Rava, you just finished telling me that even soreim ozno ozen parasa shel chavero is a hezek sheino nika. And again, we're talking now about stam shvarim. Why are we talking about Stam Shvarim? Because Mei Chatos is before what? Before Kiddush. If it's before Kiddush, then it has the same status as Stam Shvarim. Okay, how does the Gemara now make the jump from Mei Chatos, which is Stam Mayim, and ask about the question of The great chiddush of tzoreim ozno shel chavero in the ozen paraso shel chavero in the case of stam para, because again Tosfos insists that the kash is not from paras chatos, because even Rabbah would agree that paras chatos is definitely, if he was tzoreim the param chatos, that's not the case in the braisa, so he would definitely be chayv b'dinei adam. That's a direct hezek and a tremendous hezek hanikar, because you know if you tzoreim ozno shel para mekudeshes, then that's a maisa hezek with a radical depreciation of its value. So, you know, it's very strange. Now we have to read Rava's question. Tosis doesn't fill in the blanks for us. Malacha hu delo min kares zeka, meaning the subject of this brisa is hezek she'eno nikar, correct? And if the subject of this brisa is hezek she'eno nikar, and the brisa is dealing with stam or mekudash, meaning we see that the brisa is not differentiating between stam and mekudash. Where do I prove that? How do I prove that? Not from the case of paras chatos, but from which case? Mechatos. Is everybody with me on this? Because mechatos is the case of stam shvarim. I'm using that as a figurative, right? Stam shvarim, meaning it's not mekudash. So the subject of this brisa is not to differentiate between whether it's mekudash or it's not mekudash, but rather to differentiate between whether it's hezek she'eno nikar or hezek nikar. Meaning, what the brisa is doing is it's establishing the rules and regulations that govern a ptur b'dinei adam because of hezek she'eno nikar. So the brisa should have told me, according to Rabbah at least, a greater chiddush, that there could be a hezek she'eno nikar even in the case of what? Of tzoreim ozno shel apora. Ah, you'll tell me, but the brisa mentions a paras chatos, and a paras chatos is already mekudosh, and if it's already mekudosh, even Rabbah would agree that now it's defined as a hezek nikar. Doesn't matter. From the fact that the brisa is discussing a case of mechatos, you see that the subject of this brisa is not, is it mekudosh or is it not mekudosh? That's an irrelevant factor. That's totally off the radar screen of this brisa. What's on the radar screen is to define the boundaries between eino nikar and nikar. At what point is it eino nikar? At what point have you crossed over the boundaries and it became as a nikar? If that's be the case, then the brisa should have told me a bigger chiddush. Not only is malacha subsumed as eino nikar, but even tzoreim, where he cuts the ear of the animal, that's also as a sheino nikar. Eino chinami, I wouldn't need it for the case of paras chatos, because that's already mekudosh, but I would need it for the case of stam shvarim. So the brisa should have told me that in stam shvarim I'm patur, even in a tzoreim situation. Why did the brisa look for the classical case or situation of hezek she'eno nikar as malacha? Forget about malacha. Tell me, according to Rabbah, a greater chiddush. Amri, the Gemara says, Hu adin dafilu tzoreim patur. Ein achinami, again in the case of stam shvarim, says Tosfos, Rabbah would insist, and the brisa would insist, that your patur b'dinei adam, even though you did a maisa tzrima b'yazan. And that too is called hezek she'eno nikar. Oh, the hakamashmal, and she asked me, why did the brisa then limit its discussion to the case of malacha and define malacha as eino nikar? Kamashmal dafilu malacha dulo minkar hezeka chayav b'dinei shamayim. The whole thrust of the emphasis in this brisa on malacha, defining malacha as a hezek she'eno nika, when in fact the brisa could have gone a step further and defined even tzoreim as a hezek she'eno nika, is to teach us fakert the chumras hadavar, that even though this is the least nikar, meaning this is the polar extreme of eino nikar, it's very far from being nikar, all he did was what? Was malacha, nevertheless he's chayav. Why is he chayav? B'din shamayim. And this Rabbosai will further strengthen our premise of Yom Shlishi, that as far as the Chiyuv of Tashlumei Nezikin is concerned, it's the Avera that generates the Chiyuv Tashlumei Nezikin. But that's only as far as what? As far as Din Shamayim is concerned. Omar Rabba, this is the most important sugya for today. Hasorev shtaro shel chavero poter. Imagine, you're a malve. You have a shtar. With this shtar milva, you can collect 1,000. It's very valuable to you. And comes along so-and-so, and he burns your shtar. He turns it into smoke. Says Rabba, he's poter. He doesn't have to pay. Tough luck, Mr. Malve. You're out 1,000. The Amri Lay, because the Baal Ashtar has a right to say, I'm sorry, the Sorif has a right to say to the Baal Ashtar, Niyara Kloy Minach. You know what? Bill me for the value of the paper it's written on. You know, back in the day they used to write it on venom, what's called klaf, you know, and you paid a certain sum of money for the klaf. And, you know, if you want to reuse the klaf, all you have to do is, you know, erase the dio from the klaf, or maybe turn it upside down. So it's worth a kupika. I don't know what it's worth. And for that, you can sue me. But you can't sue me for the 1,000 that's written in the shtar. Why? And again, this is the, what number are we up to? Fourth case of Rabba or third case of Rabba? I forget the number. Right, we had the case of Zorik Matbea, then we had Shaf, and then we had Soreim, and now we have the fourth case of Groma, and that's the case of Soreif, Shtoro, Shel Chavero. Now, wait a second, what is the Lova saying in this case?
Lova, whoopee.
Show me the shtar.
He must be saying that I didn't borrow $1,000. Otherwise, this whole discussion is irrelevant. Meaning, the only time that the Malva needs the shtar desperately is if the Lova is denying the chov. Fine. Now, if I would ask you the following question, based on what we've seen in every single case of Rabba previously in terms of Groma, here, case number 4 of Groma, would the Soreif be chayav? And what's the answer? Yes. Where would it be chayav? Hello, is anybody home? Bidin Shamayim. Okay, so when Rabba says here that he's potter, don't get misled. He's chayav bidin Shamayim. I mentioned the other day the Meiri that says when you're chayav bidin Shamayim, if you don't pay up, you're posuliyedus b'toris Rasha. Fine. There would be a chiyuv bidin Shamayim. Now, the Chiyuv Bidei Shamayim is predicated on the fact that he had Kavana Lahasik. Meaning, if let's say, for example, he was playing with matches, again, it's a little bit of a far-out case, but inadvertently he burned someone's shtar without Kavana, that's called Potter even Bidini Shamayim, because the precondition for the Chiyuv Bidei Shamayim is Kavana Lahasik. Furthermore, the Mefarshim say the following. What happens? Is there a difference between these two cases, these two scenarios? Scenario number one is he lights a torch to the document. Scenario number two is he picks up the document in his hands and then he puts it into the fire. Do you hear the difference between the two cases?
Yes.
So guess what? There's a whole school of Rishonim who say that Rabba is talking about the following case. It's a little bit of a push, a little bit of a tight squeeze, where he did not lift up the shtar before he burnt it. He simply burnt it in its place. Where did they get this from? So let's go back to the first case of Rabba. What was the first case of Rabba? He took his friend's coin and he threw it into the Yam. So the Gemara says that it all depends. If it was Adye Duye, he banged him on his hand and then the coin fell into the water, then Rabba says he's part of the Didiyadu. But if he took the coin into his hand and then he threw it, then he'd be chayev. Shakli biyade, says the Gemara, migs on the top of Tzadi Chesam and Al, migs al gazle, the ashova boy lemevat. So those Rishonim want to say that if he lifted up the shtar before he burnt it, he's already chayav b'toras gazlan to replace the shtar. And assuming he cannot replace the shtar, then he's got to pay the 1,000.
Now come to that.
Why can't he say areishal chol fanecha? Because he burnt the shtar. But if he hadn't burnt the shtar, then he would have to return the shtar. If he can't return the shtar, he has to return the value of the shtar.
Does it make a difference as to whether he knows or not what that piece of paper is?
Well, in a case of Din Shamayim, it would make a difference. But in a case of Gazlan, a Gazlan is Chayiv, and a Chovel and a Mazik is Chayiv. In a case of direct Chavola, or in this case, the Gazlan is Chayiv, even in the case of Shogeg. So if I steal something of yours and I didn't know it was yours, and then I find out it was yours, I got to return it. The Chiyuv HaShavos HaGzeila applies.
But who knows what's written in the Shtar?
Again, he doesn't have to know what's written in the Shtar. Oh, that's the Gemara, that's the sugi that we're about to learn now. What's written in the Shtar? Maskif lo Rami bar Chome Echi Domi. What's the case? Idi Ika Sadi. We're now on Sadi Chesam and Beis, am I right? Okay. So we get to do a little exercise with our fingers today. Idi kasadi diyadi mai havi b'shtara. If there are two edim who saw the shtar, is lichtivule shtara mialya? Let him replace a shtar. Okay, this is a gevaldige chiddush that the Gemara holds you can replace a shtar. But v'idi lekasadi, if there are no edim, anami not yadinan, who knows what's written in the shtar? Okay. Omar Rava Tehei b'ma'amino, that the Soreif himself believes the Balashtar, that such a chov of $1,000 was written in the shtar. And therefore he should be chayav to pay the 1,000, because he trusts the Malva that there was a 1,000 written in the shtar. Says Rava, he's potter because he's not considered a mazik, it's only Groma ben Ezekiel. But what does the Gemara mean when it says, de'ika sahadi, Rabosai, this is a pella. The most basic rule in Eidus is called Eid mi pi Eid. Meaning that if I hear something from you, I can't testify in a court of law. I can only testify if I have personal knowledge of what happened. And in this case, there are Edim. Again, if the original Edim are here, they could rewrite the Shtar. That's not a problem. But the Gemara is saying that Idiika Sahadi, if there are Edim, they saw the Shtar before it was burnt, then they could rewrite the Shtar. What do you mean they could rewrite the Shtar? They didn't see the Alvah. That's Eid Mipi Eid. And the Rashba is a Gevaldige Chiddush. He wants to suggest that there's no psul of Eid Mipi Eid in the case of a Shtar. And why is that? Because of the famous principle of Reish Lakish, this is the Yesoda Yesodos Veshorish Hashtaris, that Eidim Achsumim Al Ashtar Havi Kamisha Nechera Yiduso Bebezdin. Meaning, two Eidim can't testify that Reuven borrowed from Shimon, but they can testify that they know that in a certain court of law there was a verdict that Reuven borrowed from Shimon. And all of Masech the Makis is based on that premise, that two Eidim could testify about what they saw or heard in a Bezdin. And when a shtar is written and signed, it's as if Bezdin accepted that shtar. So therefore, if these two Eidim saw the shtar, what they in effect are testifying is that this shtar was accepted in Bezdin. However, this is only applicable if the shtar is what's called a shtar mekuyam. The Eidim would have to have seen what's called a kiyum on the shtar. In modern terms, we call it notarized. If there's no seal of Bezdin on the shtar, then basically the shtar is worthless, because anyone could say that it was mezuyav, you know, it was forged. And then we have a problem that once the Chachamim instituted the takon of kiyum shtaras, in the absence of kiyum, the shtar is called Eid mi pi Eid, meaning it's worth nothing until this kiyum.
So does that mean if the Beis Din put their stamp on it, that means that Beis Din have their own record of it? Is that what you're saying?
Not that they have a record of it. The record of the Beis Din is now given over to the Malva. In other words, once the Malva comes into Beis Din and he asks for kiyum ashtar, Beis Din will give him back the shtar with a kiyum on it, and now the Malva has a shtar mekuyum. Once it was accepted as a shtar mekuyum by Beis Din, now anyone could testify what they saw in the shtar, and they could literally replace the shtar. So there is such a thing as a replacement. Okay, Rabosai. We don't have too much time till Mincha. The Gemara is now going to, I'm just giving a heads up here, the Gemara is going to now try to claim that Rabba here in Rabba number 4, as we said, of Sorei Shtarosa Shel Chavero, is really getting himself into what do we call it, into a very heavy issue here, meaning it's like a goal, it's like a minefield, it's very, very tricky. And the Gemara is going to make two attempts to show that Rabba really depends upon a gigantic machlokas. The first attempt is Rava's attempt. He's going to say, I'm sorry, Rav Dimi's attempt. He's going to say that Rabba is entering into a minefield because, according to Rav Shimon, who says that Dover Agorim Lamoman Kimoman Domi, which means that if I destroy your behemoth Hegdesh, I have to pay you for that because you'll have to replace it. And again, that's only the case of a neder, right? A neder means haray. A lie, which means that if this animal that I designate for the carbon to fulfill my nether is lost, I have to replace it with a second animal. Says Rav Shimon, that's called Dabra Gom Lamamet. And since I own a Behemoth Hegdesh in such a way that I will be chayav to replace it if it's lost, that gives it value for me, and I own it. And if somebody destroys it, he has to replace it. And therefore, in this case of a shtar, that in the loss, in the absence of the shtar, the malva is going to lose 1,000 because the lova is denying the shtar. In such a case, that's called dovra gorim lamoman kimoman domi. So why, Rabba, have you decided that the halacha is like the chachamim, that dovra gorim lamoman lav kimoman domi, when in fact Reb Shimon insists, and there are many indications that we paskel like Reb Shimon, that dovra gorim lamoman kimoman domi? The Gemara is going to now embark upon a chiluk to distinguish between the case of Groma and the case of Dovra Gorim Lamaman. In Dovra Gorim Lamaman, the Mazik actually destroyed the animal directly. And it's not a case of Groma. The question is, does the owner of the animal actually have ownership over the animal? After all, he was Magdish the animal. The answer is, in the case of Behemoth Hegdesh, Dovra Gorim Lamaman Kimaman, he has ownership. But that has nothing to do with Rabba. Rabba is talking about an indirect Maisa Hezek. That's not relevant to Rav Shimon. But what's fascinating is Amemar. Amemar is going to claim that Rabba is really stepping into deep, deep hot water here, because this is not a case of Groma when he burns someone's shtar, but rather it's a case of what? Of Garmi. And therefore, Amemer says, the man did doin dina Garmi, the one shita, which is Rav Meir is famous for this, he says that in the case of Garmi, you have to pay damages, then Rabba is crossing swords with that shita of man did doin dina Garmi. Okay, then we'll stop here. I hear that they're already ashraying.
Sunday
I give chum. Oh, wait a minute. Sunday is Erev Rosh Hashanah. No, I don't know.
So we're going to continue this on Thursday? Or?
I'll try to send you an email. Did you get my last email? I sent it out on Monday.
Yeah.
Okay, so that, I'll try to believe that, because people have asked me, actually Alfred is not here today, he asked me to notify him in advance what sugya you're going to be learning. He wants to prepare a little bit, so I'll try to take care of it.
Okay. I just want to point out at the beginning is that the coins that they were talking about at that time